Welcome, folks. Galen Clavio here, and welcome to Hoops HD's first ever live video podcast as we preview a couple of conferences in college basketball. And really, I don't exactly know how this is going to go, but I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. Of course, if you've been following us over on Crimson Cast over the last couple of years, you know us by the Bracket Racket moniker. We've been very proud of what we've been able to do with that over the course of time. And, you know, frankly, what we hope to do with these video podcasts throughout the course of the year here in college basketball is to give you insight into what's going on into college hoops. We all watch a lot of college basketball, but also kind of put a face to the podcast. We'd love to get your comments, your questions. We might even like to have a couple of you on to talk about hoops throughout the course of the year. So we really look forward to those of you who are joining us regularly on these video podcasts. We're also going to be recording these podcasts and releasing them as audio versions, which you can get at hoopshd.com. So be sure to check our Twitter feed, which is just at HoopsHD, and you'll get all of the latest news and information from us as far as that's concerned. And if you're not listening in on the podcast, you definitely should be. Let me go ahead and introduce our panelists today. First off, joining us from the site of what appears to be some kind of nuclear explosion going on behind him, Kyle Lamb. Kyle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, although I'm a little concerned for possible radiation poisoning. But, yeah. You know, one step at a time, we'll cross that bridge in 10 years when I come to it. So, but I'm excited to see all these young, energetic faces next to me.
I went through some radiation poisoning and nothing happened to me. I turned out just fine.
That's David Griggs, ladies and gentlemen, as he's joining us from an undisclosed location. And David, you're looking rather plush this evening.
Well, thank you, Galen. I'm just excited about the start of this. I'm just excited about the start of the year. Like, we're to the portion to where there's being fake games played.
I tell you, I'm really, David, looking forward to your preview of UNLV, given the way that you look right now.
Oh, well, thank you. Like, it'll be spectacular, I promise.
We also have Lee Delvecchio joining us. And, Lee, you've got Todd Bereseman back with you again this week. This is good to see.
Yeah, it's a much more pathetic look than last week, I got to be honest. We started out with an HGTV and Rangers successful hockey. And now we've got a video cassette tape and a tube TV. And, we're going – it's appropriate because we're going to be talking about a conference that hasn't been since these TVs were popular and a conference that plays at the speed of a VCR tonight. So this should be great.
Absolutely. We also have joining us a new addition to the Hoops HD regular panel and one who's going to be doing some hosting for us throughout the course of the year, Hank Glassner, who you may remember from podcasts earlier on this semester or this year. Hank, how you doing?
I'm doing well. But, okay, my mic is working, so that's good. Yeah, doing well. I'll be the residential West Coast hack for this website. So upon further review, just have at it. I don't know. This will be
excellent,
fun, I guess.
We need to we're hearing you. We're having trouble with your video feed, but it'll be fine. It'll be good. We'll make it work one way or the other.
Hey,
anyway,
at least he's not stuck.
Looks are very important to me.
that's funny. Anyway, so we are going to start off by talking about two conferences today that really haven't had a huge amount of change, which makes them unusual in college basketball this offseason because, gosh, there's been a heck of a lot of change in the game. If you have comments throughout the course of this podcast, please leave your comments on the YouTube feed that you're watching right now, or you can tweet us at hoopshd.com, or just hoopshd, not hoopshd.com. But you can leave comments on the YouTube channel. We will try to get to those comments as we go along. So we're going to start with the Pac-12. And, you know, gentlemen, this has been an interesting conference, to say the least. I mean, a conference that sent a team in UCLA to the Final Four 3 years in a row back in the mid-2000s. And, man, that seems like it was a long time ago. A lot of upheaval in this conference. The coach that took UCLA to those three Final Fours, gone. Ben Howland, no longer coaching in Westwood. You seem to have some resurgence going on from the Arizona Wildcats. Everybody's curious to see what happens with UCLA. We've got a couple of teams rising. This conference has kind of been, of the BCS conference powers, a bit of a laughingstock over the course of the last several years. but looks like it might be back on the upswing a little bit. I want to start with Hank because Hank's got probably the most experience, and he's also from California, so just off of that, he's got more bona fides than the rest of us. Hank, give us a quick overview here on the Pac-12 for this upcoming 2013-2014 season.
Well, I think this is the deepest the Pac-12 has been probably since the early 2000s. You could probably see seven and upwards of eight teams getting into the tournament, possibly more than teams in the Big Ten and the ACC, which is something for West Coast hoops. When you look at the new coaching change at UCLA and the recruiting power that is Arizona, Colorado up on the uprise, you have a lot of good teams there up at the top. I think this is clearly Arizona's title for the taking when it comes to the conference regular season. I think Sean Miller is doing a phenomenal job in Arizona, and basketball is better when Arizona is a power. They also have the best freshman and Drew Gordon's brother, Aaron Gordon, who could potentially be the top pick in the NBA draft after the year. I think he's probably the freshman that nobody's really talking about when it comes to star power, because everybody's thinking about Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker. But when you look out west, teams are full of athleticism, a lot of athleticism, especially with the three teams in Arizona, UCLA, and Colorado. I'm really interested to see what UCLA does with their first-year head coach, Steve Alford. But that's another discussion for another time, because I still haven't raveled my head around like why that hire even happened. I think Colorado's a team.
I was just going to say, they want to win 27 games and then lose in the round of 64.
I know. And grab players with cornrows all the time and call them their best players. Also, I think Colorado is another team that's been on the uprise. I think they have the most underrated coach in the nation, Matt Boyle. They have the most underrated player in the nation that nobody ever talks about, and Spencer Dinwiddie, who will be a lottery pick after this year. So I think you got a lot of talent here at in the Pac-12 and in the West Coast in general, and more than we've seen probably since the days of when Jordan Farmer, Aaron Aflalo, Salim Stoudemire, and co. were kind of taking over the basketball world by storm. So I think this is the best we've seen West Coast basketball in quite some time.
At least Pacific Coast basketball. The Mountain West, if you want to throw them into the mix, had a pretty good year last year. But Lee, you know, this is one of the... Oh, go ahead, Kyle, please.
Is anyone else enjoying the irony of Hank getting UCLA basketball and getting Indiana basketball, but not enjoying the combination of an Indiana guy, you know, leading UCLA basketball? I love that irony.
Well... Yeah, Hank, do you want to respond to that? Because I have some thoughts on it, if you don't.
Texas Southern. Texas Southern.
I really don't know, because I just don't see how what really Alford brings to the table necessarily that Ben Hallen didn't, so to speak. But I will say that I think the Indiana basketball mindset and the California basketball mindset are very, very, very different when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to high school basketball, and when it comes to college basketball in terms of pace and style of play and lifestyle in general. So it'll be a very, very interesting culture to see UCLA in this upcoming year. But he did take a New Mexico team and kind of amass them into kind of a Mountain West powerhouse that they were for the past few years. So even if they didn't make the tournament so often, I think that the first couple of years will be a little easier on him. My question with Alford is going to be recruiting. Can an Indiana guy like him recruit out west? He will need to do that if he wants to keep his job.
Well, he started to recruit Midwest kids out to UCLA and then had one completely change his mind after he hired the kid's high school coach, which that's probably not the best way to start off things when it comes to overall recruiting, as Kyle knows very well. I think this Alford thing's interesting, because if you're judging on regular season success, I mean, the guy had 2-3 seeds and a 5 seed in the last 4 years at a school that really hasn't had that level of regular season success in a long time. And you know, they were not successful in the tournament. I think they only made it past the second round. They didn't make it past the second round at all. They made it to the second round once.
They've never been further than the second round, ever.
Right.
New Mexico.
You know, so the question is that a ceiling that Alford created, or is that one that's just a ceiling based upon the overall situation that that team belongs to? I don't know. I do know that this is always a pressure cooker situation at UCLA. We talked about it a little bit when we did our preview podcast last week. But this is a wild card team. I mean, because they've got a tremendous amount of talent on the floor in the starting lineup. They don't have a tremendous amount of depth. And I think that that's going to be a real problem moving forward for this team. You know, obviously they're going to get, significant contributions out of Anderson. They're missing some guys from last year that played some roles. But by the same token, you know, if you've got a core of six or seven guys, that should be enough to get you through most nights in the Pac-12, I would think.
I would agree. I mean, it's the question comes down to, I think a lot of the conference, and Hank, you tell me if you agree, hinges on how quickly Steve Alford gets this UCLA team rolling, because the pieces are there to be very good. But if UCLA is kind of a train wreck, then the conference loses some of the depth I think it could have.
The only reason why I slightly disagree with that sentiment is because I think people now are looking to kind of climb up the ladder in terms of matching Arizona as opposed to UCLA. Because Arizona, when they recruit well back in the Lute Olson days, when they recruited well, and nowadays, they're back to that same powerhouse recruiting, great coaching, fun atmosphere team. And I think that they're on par with UCLA in terms of basketball talent, etc. So I think that this is more of not necessarily looking up to UCLA, but trying to match what Arizona's been doing in the first few years of the Sean Miller regime.
Arizona's ahead of UCLA.
No doubt about it. I'm just saying that, and I agree with you. I'm just saying that I think the key to this conference becoming a consistent staple in the Big Six is Arizona, because everybody wants to be like what Arizona did in a few years. And you look at Oregon with Dana Altman, he's trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, but you know, the thing I find interesting, and Kyle, I want to get your thoughts on this. If you look at Arizona over the last 4 years and you look at New Mexico over the last 4 years, you could make an argument that New Mexico outperformed Arizona. I mean, Arizona, despite being the cream of the crop, so to speak, in the Pac-12, really hasn't been that great. They were a sixth seed this last year, despite having a tremendous amount of talent. They missed the tournament entirely the year before. They were a five seed the year before that, and then in Sean Miller's first year, they missed the tournament that year too. So, you know, if Arizona's the standard bearer for the Pac-12, that kind of creates some questions about the Pac-12, I would think, more than anything else, right?
I think last year was an interesting case because, on one hand, I think that, I mean, Arizona seeding, it's kind of funny because I think most of the year people regarded them as a one or two seed, but at the end of the year, I think it came down to the fact that they really didn't have the resume to match the seed. But when it came down to it, I also thought as a sixth seed, they were kind of, maybe under-regarded a little bit. I think talent-wise, they probably were more like a two or three seed. And I think that that's kind of where they're at right now, is maybe they don't have the resume, they don't have the accomplishments to go with it. But I do think that they definitely, talent-wise, I think that they are absolutely the cream of the crop of the Pac-12 right now. I mean, they've got a very talented 3 through 5. They've got depth. I think that they need a go-to scorer on the perimeter this year, and that's a little bit, you know, remains to be seen how they're going to do without Mark Lyons. But I definitely think talent-wise, I think they are the top of the upper echelon of the Pac-12.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about one of the other big stories in this conference, and I'm going to throw this one over to David Griggs. David, I mentioned on our last podcast that no one had heard of Andy Enfield at this time last year, and now he's the head coach at USC. You corrected me in an email and noted that you had indeed heard of him. So I wanted to recognize your ability to identify obscure coaching candidates. So hats off to you on that. But
it's an art, yes. It comes from watching obscure basketball.
The idea that Andy Enfield you know, it's funny because I just watched that John Spano 30 for 30 about the Islanders and you know, how he became an owner despite really not having any money at all. And I kind of feel that way about Andy Enfield to a degree. I mean, I this as miraculous as that run was for Florida Gulf Coast in the tournament last year, it almost feels like a basketball Ponzi scheme of sorts, that he was able to parlay that into a major conference job in the second largest city in the United States. And, you know, now he's in there, he's taking pot shots at Steve Alford, you know, say, you know, if you want to play slow, go to UCLA, stuff like that. Talking a big game to start with, which I like the swagger, but is this a guy that's really going to be able to get it done short-term or long-term at USC?
I really don't know. Now, what impressed me about Andy Enfield was not the run. It was the fact that he took over a transitional team. And not only were they a transitional team, they didn't exist as an institution, I believe, until 1997. And he managed to get that team to a point to where they did very well. Their first year being eligible for the conference tournament, they made it all the way to the finals. They ended the season very well, and it's just one of those things. Like, even though they were below 500, the way they ended the season and the way he had them going, it's like, this is a guy that did a really good job. Now, to compliment a guy that did a really good job with a transitional team is an entirely different thing than saying he can go to USC and win and turn them into a top 25 caliber team or a Sweet 16 caliber team. And this is one of the things that was lost on Florida Gulf Coast last year, is that at no point did they look to be a Sweet 16 team. I mean, beating Mercer was a surprise. What they did in the NCAA tournament was it was so out of the ordinary that no person could realistically think they'd be able to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's tough because, and Lee, let me throw this to you to start with. USC, as we talked about last week, this is not a program with a long history of basketball success. I mean, they've had their ups. I mean, their Harold Miner team in the early 90s was pretty good. They had a couple of decent years when Henry Bibby was there. But, you know, and they had, you know, O.J. Mayo when he was there. But this has always been not just the stepchild to UCLA in Los Angeles, but this has been one of the doormat teams really in the Pac-10 for the course of its existence in basketball.
Yeah, and it has been. And it certainly hasn't been for lack of trying to recreate the great, dirty recruiting tactics that have helped them in football, because they found a way to try in basketball, but they actually got caught, which is unlike the football program. Well, got punished, I should say. They've got the facilities to be good. That was the point I made last week. The Galen Center, despite its name, is a fantastic facility, a beautiful college hoops facility, and is perfectly built for a top 25 program. There is no reason that a college basketball program in Los Angeles shouldn't be a top 25. They have all the tools to get there. Can Andy Enfield be the coach to get them there? I mean, on certain levels, I agree with you. It seems too good to be true, so I doubt it. But the style of play he wants is something where I think it can be successful. I mean, it's just getting athletes that want to run high-flying offense, go to the rim, a lot of dunks, a lot of excitement. You know, it's not he's not trying to install a meticulous, like a 1-2-2-1, well, a 1-2-2, or a triangle and two, or a zone. I mean, it should be easy as long as he gets the athletes, and he's got the facilities to get the athletes. And like I said, USC has shown in the past they're willing to go to any length for recruiting, even in men's basketball. And I think that the juice now with the taking shots at UCLA tells me that they're not going to hold back on any level to try and be the big dog in town for college basketball.
And it's just, I guess my thing with Enfield is someone that takes over nothing, and that's literally what Gulf Coast was when he got there, and turns them into an Atlantic Sun front runner. Is that the same skill set that's conducive to what USC needs? Because in my opinion, you got to throw the Sweet 16 run out. That's just not... That was so out of the ordinary that I don't think that clearly represents what kind of a coach he is. To me, like, the big thing was that he took complete garbage and turned them into an Atlantic Sun front runner.
I'll say one thing. If he pulls off a 1-2-2-1, then he is one hell of a coach.
Yeah. Well, with some of these officials, it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, yeah. And part of the Sweet 16 run, the opponents you face, that has a lot to do with it, and he probably got the easiest, for the particular style of play that they played, I don't think they could have gotten an easier start to things. But anyway, that's perhaps another conversation. Hank, you got the L.A. perspective going here. UCLA, USC, obviously UCLA's got more talent to start with. Who wins the long-term battle between these two coaches and these two programs?
Oh, God. Well, on one hand, you got a guy who's taken nothing and built it into something. And then on the other hand, you got a guy who had a little bit more and turned it into something. So you don't really have a fair comparison test. But I do think in the long run, I think Enfield probably has a slighter advantage just because he has more leeway. USC is in a full rebuilding mode. They really got nowhere to go but up, whereas UCLA has won the Pac-12 last year. I mean, Steve Alford has high expectations to live up to every season because at UCLA they treat every single season as if it's championship or bust. That's why the only banners that are in Pauley Pavilion are national championship banners, because that's all that matters. So I think Enfield has the advantage come long-term. I'm not sure about short-term, because he definitely will have to recruit. And he has hired assistant coaches. He grabbed the assistant coach from San Diego State. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But he's one of the best recruiters in the western part of the state. So he has everything built in place. The question is, can he coach his way to make USC better than it is? I'm not sure about that.
Hanging well, one thing I, Pauley, yep. Is that like if the tree falls in the forest? ...
I do think one thing to keep in mind if we're looking at this Enfield, Alford, USC, UCLA thing, USC's not going to be very good this year. I mean, it's going to take them a couple of years to get their talent level up to the point where they're competitive. And so
would
that's
they win
just,
the A-Sun?
Don't know. That's a good question.
I think I think Mercer. Yeah. Mercer's pretty good. I mean, oh, different podcast, but
I think it's valid. I mean, I don't think USC would win the Mountain West. I think they would struggle to finish sixth in the Mountain West this year. I mean, I do think they've got some issues.
They'd probably win the WAC.
Well, Mercer would win the WAC, too, so that's much of a test.
Mercer might be in the WAC.
Mercer's good.
Isn't Mercer in the WAC? I think that happened like a week ago, and we haven't heard about it yet. No. Anyway, let's get out of Los Angeles. Let's talk about a few other teams. You've got an interesting group, kind of a second tier of the Pac-12 that could actually be more than that. Let's start maybe with Cal. This is a team that Doug Gottlieb, and whatever you think of Doug Gottlieb, he put them in his top 10 going into this season. They were an impressive team last year overall. They had some trouble, obviously, at various times, but I think they were within a game of winning the Pac-12 regular season title. They pulled off some relatively impressive victories throughout the course of the year. And, you look at this team, they were a 12 seed in the tournament, but they were 21-12 overall. They had a nice win on the road at Denver. They had a good win at Arizona in the middle of February, which everybody was kind of surprised by. But then this is the same team that lost to Utah in the Pac-12 tournament. I mean, it's a really odd assemblage of talent. But I don't know. Lee, is this a top 10 team, or is this a team that's going to kind of struggle to make the tournament this year?
I lean more towards struggle to make the tournament. It is worth mentioning that one of the Cal assistant coaches is Greg Gottlieb. And whether or not that's an intentional bias by Doug Gottlieb, when for 6 months all you ever hear about when you talk to your brother is Cal basketball, you're going to think they're one of the best 10 teams in the country. So that's why he thinks they're a top 10 team. He's heard about them nonstop for the last 6 months. I don't think they're a top 10 team. I think they're a very good team. The problem with them is it's reliant on Jabari Bird, and I think Jabari Bird is really good, but, I mean, he's going to have to be really sensational to lead them into the top 10 in the country, and I just don't think he's dynamic enough. They're going to be really tough for them to be as good on defense this season when they've got three underclassmen in their starting lineup. Bird's great. He is the number, he was ESPN's number two shooting guard prospect in the country, so he fits right into Alan Crabb's spot, but replacing Alan Crabb is not going to be as easy as just getting a top recruit. I mean, he was, as bad as the Pac-12 was last year, he was the Pac-12 player of the year. I mean, he was huge in them knocking UNLV out of the tournament. It's too much for me to say top 10 team. I think they're a top 25 team, but top 10 is pushing it. But if they're just a top 25 team, it's still a very good year for the Pac-12. I guess my fear is if they're only a top 25 team and not top 10, will that lead to people bashing the Pac-12 when that's really still a great accomplishment?
Yeah, no, that's it.
I got to say, you know, look, I have my skepticism that this is even a top 5 team, but whether it is a top 10 team, a top 25 team, a top 50 team, we may not even know it until late January, because has anybody looked at this team's schedule? It is absolutely atrocious.
Read it off. What is it? I haven't looked at it.
Yeah, it's real quick. Coppin State, Denver, Oakland, Southern Utah, Arkansas, UC Irvine, UC Santa Barbara, Nevada, Fresno, Creighton, Furman. That's their non-conference schedule.
Denver is down this year, by the way. I think they lost just about everything. So
where's the Creighton game?
They've been pretty good, but
the Creighton game is on the road.
And is the Arkansas game part of a tournament? And who else would be in the tournament?
A neutral location.
Okay,
it's part of the
road. Coppin State and Irvine.
Don't just say haters.
I don't want to spend a whole lot of more time because we do have to get to the Big Ten, but there are a few other teams I wanted to go over. Kyle, Oregon kind of came out of nowhere last year. I don't think people were quite expecting them to be, a team that challenged for the conference title, and they did. They were 28-9. Some could argue that they were maybe a little bit underseeded, but they made it to the Sweet 16. They gave Louisville a bit of a tussle there. They beat St. Louis pretty handily, which was a surprise to a lot of folks who had St. Louis picked to go pretty far in the tournament. Dana Altman looks like he may be getting the alchemy together up there and may not have to rely solely on transfers to make this thing work up in Eugene.
Yeah, this is a team, it's going to be interesting because they do lose Emery and Singler, but they've also got, Dominic Artis is coming back. He was sensational last year as a freshman, and of course, I think their struggles, I think it's pretty obvious their struggles down the stretch the last month of the season had a lot to do with Artis being out for several of their games. But, Artis is a spark plug. He's the guy that makes that offense go. And they do have some questions, but, they've also got Mike Mosier coming in. It's going to be a big addition. So this is going to be an interesting team to watch. I don't know just how good they're going to be, but I think they've certainly got a chance to repeat, if not take a step forward from last year's performance.
Let me jump over to Hank. And, Hank, I want to ask you about the Arizona State Sun Devils. This is a team that's got a lot of interesting pieces being put together. You've obviously got a lot of transfers on this team, not just Jermaine Marshall and Brandon Kearney, but you've also got Richie Edwards. You've got Jaleel Carson, who was not a newcomer. He was a freshman last year, averaged over 18 points a game, 5 assists per game. A lot of neat, interesting pieces with this Arizona State squad. And maybe it's a little bit unfair, but I guess maybe my big question is, will we see Herb Sendek be able to lift this team up to a point where they're competing, or is he going to kind of drag them down? I feel Howland-like vibes coming off of this squad right now with Sendek,
I mean, it's an interesting roster. It's made up of, upperclassmen, but I'm with you on the expecting Herb Sendek to find a way. And when I say find a way, it's meant as a compliment.
Right.
But in them, they're one of the two teams, though, that I'm looking at that was in the NIT last year that I think could make a big step forward. We'll get to the other one in the second half of the podcast, but I've got a lot more questions about Arizona State. I mean, I fear that if you like them, you might be overvaluing having Jahi Carson come back. I mean,
yeah.
He certainly, it's such good news to see a player realize that he'd be better off coming back another year and take his name out of it. That was refreshing, and not seeing another player who just said, screw it, I'm good enough, stays in the draft, doesn't get drafted out basically on the D-League streets. But, I mean, they've got three transfers. happening. They've got Richie Edwards out of Valpo. They've got two JUCOs, Shaquille McKissick, which is a fantastic name, if nothing else, and Sai Tumala, along with the Russian freshman Igor Kulechov. If nothing else, Galen, Herb Sendick will have a hard time screwing this team up because he won't be able to yell at the correct players.
Hank, did you have anything else to add to the Arizona State conversation?
One sentence, and that is, Jahi Carson is the only reason why Herb Sendick still has a job.
Probably right.
I know.
And he probably spent the recruiting period just keeping him instead of recruiting players. That's what leads to two JUCOs and a kid from Russia.
He is a special talent. He could have been a guaranteed lock first rounder this year. I really don't know why he didn't go. But he could potentially be the Pac-12 player of the year.
Can we already take bets on where Herb Sendick will be next year?
Will it be in the Pac-12?
Sunbathing with Sidney Lowe?
I mean, that's right.
Hoops HD.
He's going to be fill our Steve Lavin role.
The Ben Howland Men Club.
Official pick is going to be on the Big Ten Network next year.
That's perfect, because
my pick, which will win the discussion, is he'll be the head coach at Oregon State.
I don't wish anything like that on the Oregon State people. They deserve something better after all this time.
Coach at Wake Forest could be a possibility.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah, that's a great point, because Jeff Bizdelic might end up on Hoops HD next year. We may not hire him.
No. I mean, we don't want to. We have standards.
Yeah, our podcasts are already they're already boring and slow enough as it is. We don't need Bizdelic here. Anyway. Over here, David Griggs, real quick before we wrap up the Pac-12, your thoughts on Colorado. This is kind of I almost feel like this is like the people's choice for the Pac-12, because they're not a California school. They're not a traditional. They came in from the Big 12, where they seem to live in the shadow of Kansas and all these other teams, and they were legitimately decent last year. I mean, they had a win at Arizona taken away from them. They looked very good down the stretch. Do you look at this team and say that this is a squad that could maybe sneak in and pick off a regular season championship in this conference?
Oh, I don't know about a regular season championship, but I definitely think they're in the mix. I think they're going to have a very healthy resume going into the tournament. I really like this Colorado team. I just think that, it's not completely out of the question. I think they're going to be more closer to first than they are to 6th or 7th, but I don't think they're going to win it all.
I guess
isn't win the Pac-12.
My only thing with Arizona, and I understand, I mean, they've got a lot of talent on that team, and Sean Miller's a good coach, and we talked about this a little bit last week, so yeah, I need to see them do something first before I'm willing to march into the season and say, this team is, without question, a top 10 squad. They're going to win the Pac-12 going away. We just haven't seen it yet. This is not a squad that exhibits a great deal of mental toughness. They seem to struggle at key times when they need to take advantage of the talent that they've got. And I could be wrong, but I really feel like when you get programs like this that are comprised of a certain, certain talent set and have certain people coaching them, they really have to demonstrate that they can do it on the big stage before you can say that they're automatically going to be there at the end of the season.
We've seen that. There's another team that kind of reminds me of that, and I don't know how you compare them, but it's Memphis. They always start off ranked high. They always play like a couple of spotlight games in November and December, lose them, and then, I can kind of see that from Arizona, too. You never in the season feeling like they were as good as they could have been or even should have been.
Yeah, and with all that focus on Arizona, I feel like Oregon's getting really underrated. They
Oregon
had a good
is great.
Team last year, and they added Mike Mosier and Joe Young, whose father is a complete psychopath. But Joe Young can be a really good scorer off the bench. We know how good Mike Mosier is, Hank. I mean, I might even pick Oregon to win this conference. I'm
picking Oregon to win this conference, but
Hank, you're the expert.
I think this conference is a lot more open than people think, because the top of that conference runs like four or five deep. You could go down to Cal and even Stanford. Stanford's going to be pretty good this year too. But back on Colorado for a second. The reason why Colorado has a chance to win the Pac-12 regular season is because, A, they have the best starting backcourt easily in the conference. And it's definitely one of the best backcourts in the nation. And Spencer Dinwiddie and Askia Booker, two very, very good players. Although Askia Booker needs to learn to just stop shooting sometimes. But, and B, because they have a sophomore returning by the name of Josh Scott, who's a low post threat. And you don't really see that in the Pac-12 anymore. You don't see guys going to the low block. I mean, Josh Smith and airballing layups taught everybody better than that. But Josh Scott is going to be very good. I heard he had 20 pounds of muscle, so the strength issues might be sorted out. But he's still just a sophomore. So they've got a low post presence, and they got the best backcourt in possibly in the nation. You could definitely argue that. So I think Colorado is very good. And December 7th, at home against Kansas, that's going to be a huge game. That'll
that's
be a litmus
a
test
game.
To see where they're actually at.
Yeah,
that's a great game.
That'll be a lot of fun. All right, real quick, before we jump off this, give me your pick for your conference champion. David, you're saying Oregon?
Oregon.
Okay, Lee?
Oregon.
Okay, Kyle?
I want to be different, but I'm going to go with Oregon as well. I'm going to say it comes down to Oregon and Arizona.
Arizona was the consensus, favorite at Media Day.
Well, we still have
but
Hank.
We weren't at Media Day. I should have been.
Hank, who's your choice for conference champion?
I like Washington State. No.
They were picked to do this bad. The last time they were picked to finish this poorly, they went to the Sweet 16.
That's a good point.
Ken Bone and
Ken Bone,
Kyle Weaver back in those days.
So not Washington.
Like Arizona.
Okay.
I like Arizona, but Colorado is going to be right there. I really do think that.
You know what? I was going to say Arizona, but you've convinced me. I'm going to say Colorado. So I'm going to put that out there. We'll just run with that. That way, no consensus on this conference at all. I love it. That's great. Although we do have three people picking Oregon, so at least there's majority rule. But
we have a consensus on going against every major projection. And no love for the Utah youth, though. Larry Krystoniak had a very busy offseason, Galen, but it didn't involve basketball.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about
that.
That's what living in Utah can do to a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, guys, congratulations. Pac-12 preview's over.
Woo!
Let's go ahead and jump forward and talk some Big Ten. And a lot to talk about with this conference, obviously. Last year, this conference delivers a team to the Final Four, almost delivers a second team to the Final Four. And, and I think my video went out here, so hopefully everybody can still hear me.
We can see you, unfortunately.
We can see you and hear you.
All right. Sorry about that. But anyway, Michigan goes to the championship game, acquits themselves fairly well. Ohio State should have gone to the Final Four, didn't. You had another team in Indiana that was a number one seed and probably should have gone to the Final Four as well, didn't. This is not as strong a Big Ten this year as it was last year. Last year was a historically strong Big Ten. And it's interesting, looking at this conference and looking at the way that talent has left and the new talent that's come in, it's not really a clear picture anywhere. And even at the bottom of the conference, I don't know that it's necessarily a particularly clear picture. I could see any one of a number of teams finishing last. I could see any one of probably four teams finishing first. Kyle, I'm going to start with you. Give me your overall impressions of the top of this conference. Who do you see as being the real power brokers and why?
Well, I think that this league this year, I think it's as good as it was last year in the middle. I don't think at the top it's going to take us half a step back at the top. Now, I know everybody and their brother is picking Michigan State to win. I've been burnt on this way too many times. Every time Michigan State is a consensus favorite in this league, it always, always, always underachieves. And you know, I'm not buying into this Michigan State team just yet. I think that they are one of, I would say, about three teams that I would pick. I think, you know, I really think Michigan State, I think Ohio State, I think Wisconsin, and maybe even Michigan. Michigan on paper has a chance, but I'm still skeptical, as we talked about on them. But I like this league because I really think in the middle, I think it's very, very strong this year. I think it goes seven or eight deep again this year. It's just maybe not going to be as good at the top. But if you ask me to pick, I think honestly Ohio State and maybe even Wisconsin will be, you know, maybe the teams to beat. I'm not sold on Michigan State yet.
Well, it's interesting because I was checking out the ESPN preview today, and they actually picked Michigan to win the conference, Now, why do you like Michigan, David? I'm curious about that because I was shocked at that. I thought maybe third or fourth place for the Wolverines, but they had him picked first.
I guess I just like, I mean, I know they lost Trey Burke, but I guess overall I just think that I just like what they have coming back, and I really think they can gel. I was just really impressed with them last year. I mean, I don't know. I just really like this Michigan team.
All right, Lee.
What are your thoughts? Very in-depth.
That was a hell of a sales job.
I'm
sold. I changed my pick. I got Michigan all the way to the championship game. No, Lee, your thoughts on Michigan and Michigan State and Ohio State, that top echelon in the Big Ten.
You know, I was ready to go into this. You know, a few hours ago, I was pretty much decided I was going to go with Michigan State. But the more I look into it, the more I think kind of like what Kyle said. Every time we look at them, really good. They kind of fall flat on their face, relatively speaking. And so much of how they became this top five consensus team wasn't necessarily for things having to do with Michigan State. It was ripples at other schools. And, I mean, it was a good late – the fact that they did a good job of getting Schilling and Ellis late in the recruiting class doesn't suddenly make them superstar infusions of talent. And I just like Michigan's rotation a little more than Michigan State's. I mean, it's younger. It's hilariously young, but I think it's more talented. And while I think Michigan State will have a very good year, if you gun to my head, if I have to pick one, I mean, you know, yeah, they have experience, but you know, it's Adrian Payne is part of the experience. Brandon Dawson is part of the experience. Keith Appling is excellent, but I'm going to go with the raw talent of the infusion of Derek Watson Jr. and Zach Irvin, plus the fact that they get back three starters from a team that went to the national championship game. I mean, for all we talk about the history, you know, the experience of Michigan State, the experience at Michigan is younger, but it did more. It did significantly more. And I'm taking Michigan, although I think, you know, it's such a great story, this battle between the two teams in state. And Kyle, you could talk about this. When's the last time Ohio State was thought to be this good in getting this little pub? I mean, you know, people are just going to go to sleep on Thad Matta, really? We're just going to ignore the fact that, you know, they recruit at a level unlike anyone else. We're going to ignore the fact that it's an all-upperclassmen lineup. And they have Aaron Kraft back, who, like, walks on water, I was told. Kyle, your thoughts?
You know, Aaron Kraft is the St. Louis Cardinals of college basketball players.
So much grit. Yeah.
I can confirm he does walk on water. You know, it is interesting because I know Thad Matta said yesterday that this is probably his best defensive team he's ever coached. And that's saying a lot because, I mean, if you look at the KenPom ratings for the last, you know, 8 to 10 years, he's coached some really, really good defensive clubs. And, he's saying he thinks this is going to be his best one. You know, it is kind of surprising they're not getting more publicity. You know, one thing that I think is interesting, kind of going back to the Michigan State thing, is, you know, they do have a ton of experience back, but one thing that's going to be a very big key to their lineup is last year, you know, one of the reasons Adrian Payne was effective is because he got to play the four, and he was a stretch four, and he was hard to guard as a four because they had Derek Nix, who was an absolute load inside offensively. But without Nix this year, they're going to have Payne playing inside on the post, and I don't think they're going to be able to take advantage as many matchups with Payne playing in the post as they would as a stretch four. And so I just think that, you know, I think that's one thing to watch with Michigan State. But, you know, like Lee said, I'm surprised that Ohio State's not getting more publicity. I think Wisconsin's going to be, you know, like going to the dentist as always. Michigan obviously has got a high ceiling if those young players come through. They've got a very deep rotation. Yeah. I think those are your top four in some order or another.
Well, Kyle, let me ask this. On Ohio State specifically, is the loss of DeShawn Thomas a minus or is it a net plus?
I mean, offensively, it's certainly a minus, but I think it's a net plus when you consider defense, because what it's allowing them to do is they're putting LaQuinton Ross, who obviously stepped up huge at the end of the last year. He was a big reason for their late success in the Big Ten tournament and in the NCAA tournament. But they're going to play him at the four this year. He's just as skilled as Thomas, if not more athletic. He's a better defensive player. And I think that, by all reports, I've heard that Shannon Scott is absolutely going to take the country by storm this year. I mean, Scott is looking like an absolute stud in the preseason. He's really explosive. He's hitting shots. It's going to allow them move Kraft over to the two a little bit. I think it's a net plus. It's going to allow them to play better team defense by not having Thomas in there.
Kyle, how worried are you about LaQuinton Ross's turnover problem?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you have to live with it a little bit because he's going to make a lot of plays, and I think it's one of those, you don't want to harp on it too much because, he's their big playmaker. He's going to have to make plays, and I think you're going to have to live with some of those mistakes at times.
Hank, obviously a lot of people focusing on those top three teams, and we talked a little bit about Wisconsin there. Wisconsin, even for them, and they seem to just reload with a bunch of random guys that end up being far more effective than you would expect, but they lost quite a bit. I mean, they lose Ryan Evans. They lose Mike Brusewitz, who was the thorn in everybody's side. Jared Bergeron's gone. So they've got Sam Decker. They've got Ben Bruss. They've got Trayvon Jackson. But this is going to be a much different look for this Wisconsin team, I feel like, in terms of the personnel package they put on the floor than what we've gotten used to.
But let's also not forget, that they're also getting a starter back from two seasons ago in John Gasser, who missed all last year with an ACL injury. So I still think they're going to be okay just because I think Sam Decker's the real deal, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if he was the Big Ten player of the year, even in a sophomore year, just because I think ability there is there. It's there. They didn't revolve the offense around him last year at all. They could defer to other players and still win games. But I think this year he's going to have to take on a bigger load, a la DeShawn Thomas at Ohio State, and probably what LaQuinton Ross is going to have to do this year too. If Sam Decker can make that leap, I think that they're better than fourth in the Big Ten.
Interesting. David, let me ask you a question. You get past that top four-tier teams, and then you've got kind of a broad middle in this conference. And the teams that we're looking at here are really Iowa, Indiana, I think you could throw Illinois into that picture.
Yeah.
Any of that group stand out to you as being a team that you feel like it warrants watching moving forward?
I really like this Iowa team. I mean, they're definitely trending up under Fran McCaffrey. I don't think they were that far off last year. Now, again, they're taking on, as good as the top of the Big Ten is, they're taking on the inverse of that once again out of conference. I mean, it's just kind of a joke, and I think that actually almost works against them because they're taking a pass at making any sort of statement for themselves out of conference, which actually puts more pressure on them in conference. But I think their program's going in the right.
Just to pass along to everybody what teams they're playing in the non-conference, here's their schedule. They have UNC Wilmington, Nebraska Omaha, Maryland Eastern Shore.
Who stinks. Eastern Shore is like one of the 10 worst teams in the country, bad.
Abilene Christian, who's not even Division I.
They are now. They're transitioning.
Oh, well, then they're half division. They're like Division I.5.
They won 12 games as a Division II team last year.
Oh, no. Oh, that's not good.
And they're transitional, yes.
So, Incarnate Word, there is your one win this season.
Incarnate Word is not what?
No, never mind. The rest of their non-conference schedule, they've got Penn, Xavier, Notre Dame, Drake, Fairleigh Dickinson. And I just want to note, every single game I just read off, a streak that goes from November 8th to December 9th, all of those games are at home. They travel to Iowa State.
You don't just walk into Abilene Christian and get a win.
And then they finish off their non-conference season with a home game against Arkansas Pine Bluff. So, yeah.
We know Cal schedule.
This schedule is atrocious.
It's really bad. But okay, no, I think you're right. I mean, Iowa's got good pieces, as you were mentioning, David. I mean, and you know, you look at Basabe, you look at Roy Devin Marble, you got Adam Woodbury in the middle. I mean, they've actually got quite a bit of depth on this team. And I know Lee's got a surprise for us here in a minute when he talks about Iowa, but it does make you wonder if they're even going to be ready to play when conference season gets going.
I'm sure.
Go ahead, Abilene Christian. Go ahead, Lee.
For them, the issue with them last year, I'm a big fan of Iowa this year, as much as that schedule is a drag. I mean, Fran McCaffrey is scheduled like he's still at Siena, but in defense, at least the Saints are playing Memphis this year, unlike Iowa. They are bringing in two players who can hopefully help with that shooting problem. I mean, shooting is the issue. I really like this team. They're very deep. I think they'll be in the top five of the Big Ten, but they've got it. The shooting was terrible. I mean, there were 308th in the country in threes last year. They bring in Peter Jones, who might be an explosive scorer for them. I mean, they don't need much to be an explosive scorer on this roster, but I think he could be the real deal. And now he's not going to start because there's so much experience, but he might start on half of the teams in this conference. He's supposed to be really good. But also, the one who we probably can try and guess more out of is Jared Uthoff, who they're finally getting out of Wisconsin, who is an Iowa high school basketball legend who is now going to be eligible. And he is supposed to be a guy who added a lot of range on his shot in the offseason because Fran McCaffrey, if nothing else, if he doesn't know scheduling, he does know what his team isn't good at, and it's been shooting. So if they can get good shooting and scoring out of Joke and Udoff, they could really make a lot of noise in the Big Ten. I think they're a top five team.
Mike Gesell's going to take a step forward this year, too.
I would mark January 5th and February 22nd on your calendars because those are the two dates that Iowa plays Wisconsin, and if you've been following the Udoff saga at all over the past couple of years, there's going to be some hell to pay, I think, because Ryan did not really want Udoff to go back to Iowa, and it didn't turn out well for anybody involved.
He didn't want him to go anywhere, and then when he pissed him off, he said, "Screw you, I'm going to go to Iowa." He could have gone to Iowa State, but he was so pissed off. He decided, I'll go in conference and sit out the extra time.
And
so
that's a good reason to do anything.
Another team, Kyle, let me throw this one to you. The Purdue Boilermakers, this is a team that last year struggled, to say the least. I mean, they really had a tough time of it. This was really the first down year in the Painter era. They finished, and I say that they struggled, and they actually finished 8-10. They weren't that bad, all told. They made it to, I don't even know what the hell tournament they were in. They lost to Santa Clara in a second round of something. But they've got some pieces, this Purdue team does. I mean, they lost some of the dead weight, but they've got what seems like a workable piece in the middle in A.J. Hammonds. They no longer have D.J. Bird, which is probably a blessing in disguise for them. What do you make of this Purdue squad? Is this a team that can challenge for a tournament bid this year?
I just don't think they're going to have the perimeter scoring to do it. I mean, they, like you mentioned, they actually did get a lot better towards the end of last season. They played Michigan really tough. They gave Ohio State a good game. They played a lot better basketball late in the season last year. But at the end of the day, they're just not. They don't have enough scoring, and I don't think that's going to change. I mean, it'll help if the Johnson brothers three make progressions like I think, you know, Matt Painter is hoping for, but they're really going to need the Johnsons to step up because that's one thing they're lacking is they don't have a go-to scorer. Now, I would defer the rest of my time to the distinguished gentleman from Parts Unknown, Lee, and Indiana, Galen, if I could get you two to argue over who will be hurt by the new hand-check rules more, Purdue or Pittsburgh. Go.
I yield the balance of my time to hear the incorrect answer from the fine gentleman from Parts Unknown, or Galen, rather.
I mean, that's been the hand check has been that's been Purdue's defense for the last 35 years. Like, I mean, Gene Cady, when he came down off of Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments of Purdue basketball.
Okay. Like,
the first commandment was
the hair up there.
Every opportunity, you know. I mean, that's been Purdue's MO from the beginning. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm really fascinated to see how that change occurs because it's just part of the DNA there. And you know, look, I think Pitt's got their own issues, and I mean, I'm curious there to see. I am curious to see how many coaching careers the hand check change ruins. It should be quite fascinating. But Lee, what are your thoughts?
It's Pittsburgh. It is. It just. I don't like the "you're just wrong," but I mean, God, Pittsburgh just doesn't try and play defense. They just try and commit assault. And between that and having to get used to a conference where that. Like, it couldn't have been worse for Pitt. Good thing they're getting all the TV money. It was bad enough when you knew you were going to a conference that is less physical, but now the NCAA has expressly forbidden your only defensive strategy. Pitt could be in some real trouble based on this. I'm going with Pitt because Purdue has shown that they can be an up-tempo team under Matt Painter at times with dynamic players compared to what Pitt does. I mean, Pitt's going to have to win games 10-8. I mean, Purdue can at least get the 50. Pitt's done. It's great. It really is. By the way, if you want to defer some time, I'd like to yield the balance of my time to the gentleman from the Midwest, Mr. Lamb, to explain to me why the great John Grosch isn't going to be in the bottom half of the Big Ten this year.
This isn't question hour. The gentleman,
Prime Minister's basketball question.
Well, Kyle is the closet John Grosch guy, so I'm going to him for Illinois.
Closet John Grosch. I think he's well out of the closet by this stage on John Grosch. But Kyle, please go ahead. Your thoughts on Illinois?
I mean, I think everybody knows my feelings about Grosch. I don't think that this is going to be the year it's going to happen. I think probably next year. Is when Illinois will break out a little bit, but I do think Tracy Abrams is going to take another step in his development this year. He's going to be big for them. He's going to have to be because they're just not very deep, But Kendrick Nunn is a good looking freshman that they're pretty excited about. I think he's going to contribute. They really need a lot out of Nana Egwu though, and to be I think to have any chance of making the tournament, Egwu is going to have to be a true post player instead of just some guy that likes shooting an 18-foot jump shot. And I don't think I don't think that's possible. I think it's probably going to be one more year before Illinois is a team to really watch. But, you know, they're going to be good enough that they can get you on a given night, but I don't think they're going to be able to string a lot of victories together this year.
How many games do you think it'll take before Aaron Cosby turns the entire locker room against him? He's a good enough shooter percentage-wise, but he's going to want the rock a lot. And with a team that's not going to be the top half, I wonder if he's going to upset the apple cart when you've got some very good recruits coming in who really should get the bulk of the time up top. But Crosby's a guy who, you know, if Illinois does anything, he's going to be a big part of it because they've got him coming in. And, I mean, watching Rayvonte Rice try and play the wing at 6'4", 240. Is going to be really fascinating to watch.
It'll be a flashback to the Sergio McLean era, which was a fascinating one. If anybody remembers that, I will give Illinois credit for this. They have at least some halfway difficult challenges in the non-conference. They travel to UNLV. They travel to Georgia Tech. They travel to Oregon. They have Missouri on a neutral floor. They have Illinois Chicago on a neutral floor.
Where is that game? Is that game in Chicago?
I'm assuming it is, but I'm not. I haven't checked. I know it's on a neutral floor, but I'm not sure what floor it's on yet. But anyway, well, let's jump off of Illinois and Hank. I want to get your thoughts on Indiana coming into this season. Obviously, the team that spent a lot of time at number one last year. They lost two top five lottery picks in the NBA draft. They lost a lot of depth in terms of their starting lineup. What do you expect out of this team for this season?
Well, I don't necessarily expect a full step backwards from where the program's been going, but I do expect some kind of premature stop to all this improvement. I mean, when you lose 4,000 point scorers in holes, Oladipo, Wofford, and Zeller, obviously there's going to be a little bit of a time to try to readjust to what you have. I think the key to this season is definitely Yogi Ferrell, and if he could take the reins as the point guard and as the leader on the floor, because let's face it, he wasn't the floor leader as the point guard last year. Victor Oladipo was the leader on and off the floor of that team. Now, it'll be interesting to see if both, I think both Yogi and Sheehy can kind of share the load in terms of leadership on the court and off the court. They do have Noah Vonleh coming in. They do have a bunch of freshmen that look good, but this isn't the same team. Tom Crean, we know how he coaches. He loves to play in upwards of 10, 11 guys in his rotation. I think that could come back and bite him in the behind this year, because you need to get a core in place early in order to solidify that rotation later and when you go to the tournament. So I don't necessarily think this is a bad team. I just don't necessarily think that they're on par with the Michigan States, and the Wisconsins, and the Ohio States right now. But I do think that they'll make the tournament. I don't think they'll be anywhere close to where they were last year, though. But I do expect them to have a semi-decent season.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hit a bunch of good points there. The big unknown with this IU squad right now is we just really don't know how any of these freshmen are going to perform when you get to the conference. I mean, Noah Vonleh is obviously a very talented player. He was a McDonald's All-American, and he comes in and he'll fill a role. The question is, can he play in the post on a regular basis? I think the answer is probably no. He seems like more of a slasher, kind of combo forward sort of player. You know, you've got Luke Fisher who comes, and he was a Parade All-American. He's 6'11", kind of reminiscent of Zeller from a physical perspective, but not nearly as advanced. And then you've got a lot of wing players who are going to have to try to integrate. I mean, Tom Crean, his life goal seems to be to create a perfect copy of the 1989 Illinois basketball team that, you know, had like they had a starting lineup that where everybody was between 6'3 and 6'8, and they were all incredibly talented. They could all play multiple positions, and that was a very good team. They went to the Final Four, but there's so much drain on this team from a scoring perspective, from a talent perspective, and you know, Yogi Ferrell was very effective last year, and I think in large part that was because he had so many options to pass the ball to. You know, whether that was down low to Zeller or to outside to Hulls or just letting Oladipo create, it's not going to have those things this year. Sheehy, as you mentioned, Sheehy's never really been a starter. And so seeing what he's able to do, having to be the guy night in and night out, having to be a leader for 35 minutes on the floor rather than 21, that is really going to be curious to watch. So I don't know. I mean, I think this team should make the tournament. I mean, I see them winning somewhere between 19 and 21 games because, again, they have a ridiculously easy non-conference schedule. That seems to be the MO for most of the teams in the conference this year. But whether that translates into success in the conference, it's hard to say. I mean, it's the youngest team that Tom Crean has had in 3 years. And for those of you who remember that team won 12 games. So That could be a bit of an issue. So anyway, as we jump down to the bottom portion, well,
Darren, we're all about helping people. And Tom Crean, here's some free advice. You know, Syracuse has played the zone before. They're probably going to play it again. You might play them again, and I just want to be helpful.
We do. We play them in December. It's the ACC Big Ten Challenge game.
Well, okay, see the foul line I poorly drove? Now, here's the thing. They were good at passing it there, but then you pass it here or you pass it here. You don't just stand and spin around for a while.
Yes,
I'm here to help. Okay. I want to help. It's mostly because we won't have podcasts if Galen commits suicide. And I think if they look unprepared for another Syracuse zone, you know, I'm concerned.
I almost made the decision to drive out to the Carrier Dome to watch that game. I can't because I have other obligations, but I appreciate your help. I'll pass that along to the Brain Trust, and we'll see what they have to say.
It was a banner year for Indiana.
Oh, yes!
I thought in our contract this season we weren't going to bring any of those things up on the preview podcast, but okay, fine.
Well, in fairness, Tom Crean brought them all up first.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. David, let me hit you real quick here. Bottom portion of the conference, you've got Penn State, you've got Nebraska, you've got Northwestern with a new head coach there. Chris Collins taking over there, coming in from Duke. Any chance, in your opinion, that any of those teams rises up and maybe challenges for an NCAA tournament berth?
I'm going to go with my own personal sentimental pick, and that is Nebraska. It's not so much that I like Nebraska. I like Tim Miles. He has a tendency to take utter garbage and turn it into gold. Most might not appreciate this, but when North Dakota State transitioned up, he guided them through that. When North Dakota State went to the NCAA tournament, he wasn't there. He had left for Colorado State, but he essentially put all the pieces in place to make that happen. Colorado State was even worse. I think they had finished outside the top 250 4 years in a row before he got there. Within his third year, they were, they challenged for the tournament his second year. They made it his third. And again, although he wasn't there last year, he was the one that obviously put the pieces in place. It's his second year at Nebraska. I don't know if they'll make the tournament. They probably won't. But even if he gets to the NIT, they're going in the right direction. I really think, I'm being serious, he will get Nebraska going. He will make them to where it's not – I think they're going to challenge for the tournament more often than not in a very short time. I don't think they're going to win national championships or contend for Big Ten titles, but he will put them on the map. He's a great coach.
Well, I mean, they have a new building this year.
Nebraska does?
Yes, the Pinnacle Bank Arena, which was built at a cost of $181 million, it seats 15,147 for basketball. It has 36 executive suites, 20 lodge boxes, 900 club seats, club lounges, and one terrible basketball team playing in it.
Well, did they send you the brochure in the mail or something? What the hell?
I just opened it on Wikipedia. The nicest thing I can say about Pinnacle Bank Arena this season.
Did Wikipedia have the part about the one terrible basketball team?
Not yet. I'll say this: Pinnacle Bank Arena will be the nicest arena in the Big Ten for basketball and hockey, and the worst team in the Big Ten playing in it for basketball and hockey.
In fairness, the University of Nebraska isn't shelling out for this arena. It's actually the city of Lincoln that shelled out for the arena, and Nebraska is just a tenant there. What a coincidence! But in fairness, though, Nebraska actually does have their own really, really nice basketball practice facility that's absolutely, upper level. So the combination of the practice facility and the new arena, their facilities are definitely, they're doing everything they can to try to compete in basketball. It may not be enough, but they're trying.
Do you think they can get to 1 point per possession this year on offense?
Last year they were at, last year their adjusted efficiency was at 100.5.
Okay, so in Big Ten play, do you think they can get to 1 point per possession?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Do
you know what they were last year in the Big Ten on offense?
Really bad?
It was 0.92.
Yeah, that's really, really bad.
I mean, they weren't like 0.97 here. I mean, it was brutal.
They had a couple of off-shooting nights. I mean, it happened.
I will say this about Nebraska. I don't think their place at the bottom of the conference is a fait accompli. I think that if you look at Northwestern, for instance, new coach coming in, and it's hard to really predict what's going to happen with that squad. That team was worse than Nebraska last year in conference. That team was 4-14, lost its last seven games in a row. It was just not very good at all. They lose Drew Crawford. They lose Jared Schwapscher. They lose Reggie Hearn. There's not much. Alex Marcatulio is gone. There's not much in the cupboard for Chris Collins starting off at Northwestern. So I think at the very least, I would expect Nebraska maybe to maintain their position at 11th. The team I'm kind of curious about, Hank, is this Penn State team, because they've got, you know, some transfers coming in. This was actually kind of a sneaky team to play last year, even though they went 2-16 in conference. They had some near misses. You know, they only lost by 4 to Nebraska at home. They only lost by 2 at home to Iowa. They only lost by 8 at Michigan, and then they turned around a week later, 10 days later, and they beat Michigan at home. You know, so I think you could see Penn State possibly being a little bit of a surprise in this Big Ten season. No?
No, just because, yes, I get Tim Frazier back, and yes, a lot of players individually got better because Tim Frazier was out for a while. That said, their best player when Tim Frazier was out was Jermaine Marshall, who averaged 15.3 points and 4.6 rebounds per game. And what does he do? Oh, I'm going to go to transfer to Arizona State. Well, I don't know if that's really...
Well, I mean, to be...
linear transfer to play to Herb Zinbeck. But yeah, they're really a team of just Tim Frazier and Jermaine Marshall.
Yeah.
I mean, Galen, it's cockiness like that that could cost Penn State its 11th-place spot.
The 11th place spot isn't even a given at this point. It's right. Interesting. I don't know. Go ahead. Go ahead, Hank.
I just want to veer off Penn State for a second. I just noticed something in terms of a correlation between the Pac-12 and the Big Ten that we just talked about. We talked about Andy Anfield kind of taking a little bit of a gamble, taking a coach from a small school and going to a USC. Does anybody see a little bit of a, not really a comparison, but like a correlation between that hire and the Minnesota hire, Richard Pitino? Because that, I thought, came out of left field. I was not expecting that at all.
I think USC's move was a gamble. They kind of went with it with the rock star of the day, who may or may not be a one-hit wonder. I think what Minnesota did was just completely freaking stupid.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, and here's why I agree with you, Mr. Puppet. It's because if they had just hired Richard Pitino as their star candidate, that's one thing. But with all this talk about the young, they got Richard Pitino, people are just gonna forget the fact that he was 54th on their list. I mean, Kyle, were you
second,
even able to?
52nd.
Kyle, do you have the full list of how many different people turned them down? I mean, Richard Pitino looks good because, by no default other than the fact that he was the best guy available at the end of a terrible list. It doesn't mean it wasn't a terrible decision. I think this is I think Minnesota's going to blow up. I think they're really going to regret this. They screwed this up right from the start with firing Tubby Smith, and they got exactly what they deserved, I think.
Yes, in not so great moments.
I mean, honestly, look at it this way. He can sell this as a program because he is the most accomplished offspring of a legendary coach since Pat Knight. And so,
Kevin Willard demands a recount on that, okay?
Oh, wow.
But no, I do think with
Tony Bennett, I would argue.
Tony Bennett has actually been very successful. I would agree with that. But no, I think the Pitino thing, look, I understand people looked at the firing of Tubby Smith and they were like, well, that wasn't a great idea. There were some problems with that team. I mean, it wasn't just that they were underachieving from a success standpoint, but I think the treatment of the Trevor Mbakwe situation, I think the DUI for Sol Smith at the beginning of the year, I think there were a lot of things that program was having to deal with that made it an easier decision than we would like to think. Now, I think it looks a lot worse in retrospect because of who they hired. It is the biggest wild card hire I think we've seen in the Big Ten, gosh, since what? Randy Ayers, Kyle? I mean, I'm trying to think of a bigger wild card hire that wasn't born out of a sense of desperation like Indiana hiring Mike Davis.
To be honest, though, I like it, and I'll tell you why. Because the Big Ten has fallen into a habit, both in football and basketball recently, of relying on conservative, you know, Big Ten-oriented coaches that have you know, played the part for many years and have Big Ten roots. And too many programs have played it safe. Now, this could end up backfiring for Minnesota, but I like the fact they're willing to gamble because, you know, he's a guy that's going to bring a new style into the league. it might work, it might not work. Who knows? I mean, look, it could be a disaster, but at the same time, you know, it could pay big dividends. The Patino name, say what you want, but he's going to get some recruits' attention just because he's a Patino. It may not be right, but, he will get at least in the door. And I think the combination of that and having a different style of play, this could end up being a good hire for them.
I think the Patino name is the reason why he got hired.
Right.
Like the main reason has to be.
That's why I have a problem with it. And Minneapolis, I mean, Hank, you know, Minneapolis is an excellent high school basketball market. There's a lot of real talent there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hank, do you think that the flashiness of Richard Pitino is going to fly with the I mean, I don't think there's an Italian restaurant with high-end suits in it on every block in St. Paul, but it's probably less than what Richard Pitino's used to. Hank, do you think that can – do you think he might turn off some of the inner circle, which – I mean, it's really weird recruiting in Minneapolis, but the talent's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about Minnesota besides the fact that I wouldn't want to play basketball in Minnesota, so there's that. I'd rather go play basketball elsewhere. So regardless, I know that it's been known for having a little bit of a basketball hotbed in terms of high school recruiting, but I just don't think – yeah, he has the name, but –
this was
so there's so many names across the country that have such more prestigious resumes and such more attractive fan bases and et cetera, and courts. They definitely have the ugliest court in the Big Ten.
Right. Well, this is Minnesota that. Made the round of 32 last year. The last time they made it that far was when Clem Haskins, and they cheated. The last time before that was 1994. So this isn't like he went to Minnesota and completely wrecked the New York Yankees. I mean, this team has never really been good. They were horrible when he took them over.
Yeah.
They weren't bad. I'm trying to think of the last time a coach was fired after making the round of 32, and I believe it was Dino Gaudio at Wake Forest, and wow, hasn't that worked out nicely.
Well, but I think that's a great point because – we can't talk about the Dino Gaudio situation on this podcast for legal reasons, as Lee will attest. But
yeah.
Dino Gaudio was
fired. He deserves another job. I'll say that. Jeff Bezdelic's making him look like Dean Smith.
Okay, it just dawned on me that was a bad example.
He deserves another
job if he could get off ESPN.
I know where you're going with it.
It's a good example because I don't think Tubby Smith was fired for lack of performance. I really don't. And I think Tubby Smith's an excellent coach. I wish him the best of luck in Lubbock. That's probably not going to work out particularly well.
Lord.
But I think that the point here is there were things that were happening or it had happened at Minnesota off the court that were insurmountable as far as keeping him there, and that's the real reason that he's gone. And so they were kind of in a position where, you know, what are you going to do at that point? If you feel like you have to get rid of a guy, it's going to be hard to replace a guy like Tubby Smith because everybody has a lot of respect for him. And I think, even though I think that the, you know, giving Richard Pitino the job at this particular junction in his career, probably not the best of ideas on paper, they could have done a lot worse in terms of trying to catch a guy with some buzz coming into this sort of a situation. So
I guess my issue with it is if your issue with Tubby Smith is that he's lost the locker room and you need to bring in a disciplinarian, you don't bring in a 30-year-old something kid hotshot from Florida with a big name to try and get the locker room in order.
I don't think it was a locker room thing. I think it was more of a discipline situation than anything else. Not in the locker room. I'm talking about people, you know, and their actions outside. And I think, again, I think a lot of this
you
comes back to
the – You
don't
think it was a swing in the miss to get Shaka Smart? You might know something that I don't.
No,
I mean, the puppet knows a lot, but he doesn't.
I mean, I don't
know
I don't
the intricacies
so.
At Minnesota.
people thought that when Illinois fired Bruce Weber that was a swing at getting Shaka Smart, and everybody was shocked when Shaka Smart turned that job down. I think anybody, and they would have known, the people that ran the search for Minnesota would have known that Shaka Smart, if he wasn't going to leave VCU to go to Illinois, he wasn't going to leave VCU to go to Minnesota. So
you're
I really
right.
I really don't think that
my experience with administrators is that they're not always that smart, but maybe that's just my experience.
Yeah, the search firms tend to be smart. Hank, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
No. If you, I don't know if you already brought it up or not. I think the reason why Minnesota thought that they had a 1% chance, if anything, of getting Shaka Smart was because the AD at Minnesota was the former AD at VCU.
Yeah, that's true. I know we hadn't brought that up, but I actually think they went into it knowing they probably weren't going to get him, even though they had that connection.
That's interesting. Yeah. You're serious.
I really think that I think the firing of Tubby Smith and the hire of Richard Pitino or the hire of whoever were separate things. I really do. So we'll see how it plays out. That is a team that doesn't have the talent to really compete for an NCAA tournament berth this year. So he's going to have a year or two to kind of get things going the way that he wants them.
Yeah, and it helps that he can play that style. And if it doesn't work this year, whether it's true or not, he can. We'll know real quick. It can really look like it's just the players when that style doesn't work. Yeah. When it might not be the players. And my issue is it's even worse if they thought they wouldn't get Shaka Smart, considering how much time they spent trying. I want to know what the backup plan was, because there's no way it went from Shaka Smart, as we know, to Richard Pitino. You've got to have, if you're going to shoot for a home run, you better come up short with a triple or a double. This is a suicide squeeze, this hire. And it had better work, because you went from, this is a real reach, because...
I was on their search list. That's how bad it was.
It had to go over as a wet fart in the room with the booster club, and it turned out, yeah, well, we got a Pitino. Yeah, no, I mean, not the one you're thinking of.
That's delightful. Anyway, we're out of time. We've been doing this for an hour and a half. I really appreciate everybody tuning in. Before we go, let me get everybody's pick for regular season Big Ten champion this year. David Griggs, I'm going to start with you.
Ohio State.
Okay, Ohio State is the pick. I will pick next because I never get to pick before last. So I'm going to say Michigan State. Everybody was poo-pooing them. I think Izzo gets it done. I think that Appling settles down. It's going to be a good overall situation for them this year.
Real quick on Michigan State, just real quick. I think they're going to finish about fifth or sixth in the conference, lose some games they shouldn't, get to the tournament as a five or a six seed, and then march straight to the Final Four.
This is
what Michigan State does.
It is exactly what they do. Hank, your thoughts on conference champion?
I like Michigan State just a nudge above Ohio State. I think that Gary Harris is the real deal. I think he'll take player of the year in the conference, and I think that he'll become not only just a jump shooter, but he'll become an all-around offensive threat.
All right. Kyle.
I think Michigan State's the most talented, but again, I've been burnt before picking them in seasons like this, so I'm going to go with somebody else. I'm going to go with the safe pick, the team that's got 5 Big Ten titles in the last 7 years, Ohio State.
All right, Lee.
I'm going Michigan 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan State 3. My big gamble is I think Iowa will be a top 5 team in the Big Ten, and that Nebraska will not.
That's fair. I'm not sure about my order in the Big Ten yet. I've done it 3 or 4 times. I've had Iowa finishing anywhere from 4th to 8th in the conference, and I've had the same. I haven't had Purdue quite as high as 4th, but I think that they could be a contender for 5th or 6th in the conference, and I think Indiana's up there as well. A lot of things still need to be taken into account before we see what happens. I'm looking forward to this November because at least we'll get a chance to see some of these teams in action early against some decent competition. Anyway, gentlemen, this was excellent. Really enjoyed having you on board and looking forward to doing this again. We will have more preview podcasts as we go along, folks. We'll be hitting all the major conferences. We'll be hitting a couple of the mid-majors. We'll do a small conference podcast. We'll have one big extravaganza that Sunday before the college basketball season starts, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I see David Griggs already hitting the Evan Williams.
Thanks to Josh and Landon, who tweeted at us, by the way, who they were big fans of the puppet, and that was before alcohol got involved. So I can only imagine. That was David Griggs once he saw who's in the Western Athletic Conference. Immediately, Boone's Farm came out.
Oh, Boone's.
Yeah.
Western
exactly.
Athletic is neither Western nor Athletic.
Thank you.
Yes, it is.
Oh, the jokes.
Yes. Anyway, we need to wrap it up. I'd like to thank Lee Del Vecchio. I'd like to thank David Griggs. I'd like to thank Hank Glassner. I'd like to thank Kyle Lamb for joining me on the show tonight. Thanks to all of you folks for joining us on the show as well. I'm Galen Clavy. This has been the first ever Hoops HD video podcast. Check us out on Twitter. Hoops HD is the handle. Also, check us out at our website, hoopshd.com. We'll be back with more of these in the future. Looking forward to a great college basketball season. We'll catch you on the flip side. So long, everybody.